Welcome, everybody, to another edition, a very special edition of the Hawaii Film Critics Society, with, of course, the founder of the Hawaii Film Critics Society, Professor Barry Wurst, and myself, just a wayward critic who loves to talk about movies. We have a very special guest today, a man who knows Hollywood in and out, and basically just... He's got a mind that is like no other in the business, in the Hollywood business. And I got to say this as well. He also has a book that has been released called Virtue Bombs. And he has a great site called Hollywood in Toto, which I encourage everybody to visit because great perspectives on movies and what's currently happening in Hollywood and in the climate of Hollywood when it comes to what we're seeing in the theaters and what kind of movies are currently being made. So, ladies and gentlemen, please give a big warm round of applause to Mr. Christian Toto, who is in the house with us today. Christian, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Listen, it was kind of like pulling teeth. It was as if you were the president. And I had to go through Barry every time. Well, I got, you know, I feel happy and privileged that you would grace the Hawaii Film Critics Society with your presence. Well, now,
when Barry says jump, I say how high.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, great. So it's the other way around. Okay, I see. I gotcha. What I wanted to do today, of course, Christian, you have been doing a lot of media as of late. You do write, of course, for Hollywood in Toto. You've done work for the Daily Wire as well. Sure. I've seen you recently on Chrissy Meyer, who I think is hilarious, and she's such a sweetheart. And of course, you were just recently on Tim Pool's podcast. And that, of course, Tim is more on the lines of very much current events and politics. And we're movie guys. So I wanted, and I was watching you promote your book, and I was like, man, I really wanted you to sink your teeth into what you know best. And I figured that this would be the perfect platform for Professor Barry and myself, being of like mind like you, and kind of find out what's happening in the world of Hollywood now. Because for me, the landscape has changed in the last, I'd say, 20 years or so, as far as Hollywood goes, as far as the movies that we grew up with. So I definitely wanted to get into that this afternoon. But before I do that, Christian, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Please tell us what it is about the film industry that you love so much.
Well, I'm a recovering art major. I wanted to be an illustrator for as long as I could remember. And then I realized I can't draw hands and feet very well. And I had no idea how to make a career of it. So I kind of went on my plan B, which is I love movies. I wanted to write about movies. So I got into journalism, worked at a couple of different newspapers, and then kind of elbowed my way in to become a film critic. And that's kind of how it started. And, you know, the bottom line for me is that when I was a kid, I loved movies. I used to watch movies with my dad. We'd watch Abbott and Costello films. And I just fell in love with them. And then when I was a teenager and I couldn't date girls because I was too nerdy and too shy, I went to the movies with my buddies. So, you know, that was my plan B at the moment. And so that's where I am today. And then just for full disclosure, I cover a film often from a right of center perspective. So I found that many people who cover Hollywood are left of center. There's no crime there. It just is what it is. But I thought I would be, you know, kind of true to myself and also offer something that's unique in the marketplace, and that's where I am.
I am with you, and I have to say that I am I very much considered myself a conservative. I don't know if I can say that. Okay. All right. I don't know if can Barry hear me right now. No,
I'm always Barry.
I think my Hawaii Film Critics Society badge may be revoked if I don't stop it. What's interesting for me is that that's the background that I come from. My father and my mother love movies. My father's from California. He grew up in Hollywood. That's what his entertainment was. So of course I have this passion for movies and for film, and I've never felt, I don't know how to put this, and maybe you guys feel the same way, I've never felt so separated from the art form that I really love. You know, I feel like I don't belong in that place anymore in that respect. And so I'm trying to, and this is what this is almost like a therapy session. This is why I wanted to talk about these issues that are surrounding what your book talks about in Virtue Bombs, talking about how Hollywood has become quote unquote woke and how that's affecting the product. Because a great man, I told this to Barry last night, I said, a great man once said, and I think you know him, great man once said that politics is downstream from culture. And so I think we forget that in the United States, our culture is probably our greatest export. So from our music, especially to our movies, I think the world gets a representation of who we are through that form of entertainment. Assessment. Mm-hmm. So I guess starting from your book, where do you think things started to take a turn? Where do you think that, why do you think that movies have become so, I guess, political when they don't necessarily, I mean, at least in my perspective, don't necessarily have to be?
I want to back up a little bit. There's always a place and a wonderful place for political films. I think they're important. I think they're interesting. I think they're challenging. And I always want that to be sort of part of the overall entertainment pie. I think that's,
sure.
You know, I think it just enriches everything.
Right.
But what I do see sort of across the landscape is that like whatever percentage that was is increased in some ways dramatically, in some ways in kind of morphed in different directions. So I want to kind of say that up front, because I think there could be great movies and there could be great political movies that I don't agree with, but they're still challenging and thoughtful and engaging. And I still absolutely walk away from them being entertained. But I just think the culture itself has gotten more divided, gotten more political, gotten more tribal. And it's one of the things I had a squabble or two with my wife recently. My wife is very left of center and I'm not. So we manage it, you know, because we love our kids. We love our home. We have similar values that are shared.
Sure.
The fact that I want X and she wants Y, politically speaking, you know, can be frustrating or whatever, but it shouldn't be the end of the world. It should, you know, just be, right. we believe in different paths to a political future, but right. It just seems that the culture itself is really doubling and tripling down on this. And you mentioned a frustration and it kind of rang a bell with me, because I still love movies. I still get a big charge out of seeing them. I still love watching older films that I watch as a kid. One of the reasons why I love sharing Barry's reviews on my site is it's sort of like reliving my childhood, reliving my teen years through that. But I do feel a disconnect with the actors themselves. And right. It's not just that they're political, not just that they don't agree with my views in certain ways. It's, you know, I'm a big boy. I can take that. But I think what the book deals with specifically is sort of free speech issues and issues of creativity and allowing the artists to have their say. And I see very few artists within the industry, especially the biggest names, standing up for that. And I think that's an apolitical stance. And I think it's an important stance. So from my perspective, that's a big disconnect I feel within the community.
You know, that you made it sound more eloquent than I did. So I actually agree with you, because there are films out there that I don't agree with politically that I think are fantastic. I could not agree with you more. I had made this point the other night when Professor Barry and I were talking. I've always thought that movies had a tendency to be more political in certain respects, even from the 1930s, when I was talking to Barry about it, and Barry can chime in whenever he feels so compelled to. But, you know, when you look at a movie like Paul Muni's I Was a Fugitive in a Chain Gang, that was kind of a representation of how awful it was to be in that situation and how prisoners were abused in that situation, or shining a light on crime the way that Scarface did with Paul Muni, yet again, another great representation. Mm-hmm. I always thought that these movies were movies with a message. And you would, I don't know if they would be considered woke in today's culture, but they were pretty progressive with the messages that they were pushing even in the 1930s. At least that's what I thought. Am I looking at that incorrectly?
Barry, you want to jump in then, man?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a difference between a film that has a political position versus a pre-established political agenda. And that's what we'll, that's the latter that we're looking at today. You're absolutely right, Greg. I mean, I my mind goes to Chaplin. Chaplin did a film where he, the little tramp, kicks the backside of a prison guard and so on and so forth. And that's what got Chaplin in trouble in this country. So that sort of thing has always existed, but it is exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, political films, and I agree with Christian. I know, you know, Greg, you and I have talked about this many times. I mean, how much we love the movie Bullworth, how a film like how brave that film is, how that movie basically sets fire to both sides of the aisle. I love films like that. And we don't get films like that anymore. It does seem like these films, primarily, certainly mainstream films, they have these prerequisites that have to be in there. And I think that has a lot to do with how corporate Hollywood is, of course. That has to do with how expensive these films are. So you want to appeal to the widest fan base. You don't want to offend anybody. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, you're making these Mick movies, basically, which is not the same as doing something that's personal and honest. If we're going to look back at the films of the 70s with the kind of love and devotion that we all do, we should look at these movies and go, these were real people, real issues. These are characters that weren't necessarily likable and weren't necessarily even changed for the better at the end of the film. And that's a reflection of life. So I do worry that art is becoming so sanitized or so, you know, prepackaged, so to speak, that every film is like a McMovie. And, you know, McMovies are fun for a while, but if that's the only thing, if that's the only thing we're getting, then we're not getting the kind of, so to speak, cinematic nourishment that we used to be.
And I think, go ahead, Christian, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've heard stories from creators, actors, directors, screenwriters, and they often say, you know, maybe 10, 20 years ago, they wouldn't go near a Netflix or a Hulu or Amazon because it was just TV. But now they go there, they have all the resources, all the great talent, but also they don't get as many studio notes, like do it this way, avoid that topic. And I think that sometimes we get some really great art on these streaming platforms because they're letting the artists just be themselves. And sometimes they fall on their face, there's no disagreement there. But I the more unfettered the experience, the better. And I think we lose that. And I think you could point to woke or just sort of corporate culture. I think there's always been studio notes, you know, and get the four quadrants and get more people in the seats. And, you know, maybe the way film, the theatrical experience is changing where you have the super blockbusters or nothing, maybe that'll let things loosen up a bit. And maybe the McMovies will continue being McMovies for the people who enjoy them. And then maybe others will get more sophisticated and more organic. We'll have to see.
Would it be fair to say that Hollywood's corporate culture has changed? I mean, for them to produce the movies they are, I mean, they can't look at the box office and go, you know, those returns are what we're looking for. You know, in
it's
that respect,
just because the pandemic issue, you know, I feel like a weekend or two ago, there were a couple of movies that came out that were new. I think they were original-ish and they did okay. They did solid box office. And I thought, that was the first weekend I could see maybe things are getting a little closer to normal. But, you know, I also blame us for some of the issues. You know, everyone says, you know, sequels and remakes and reboots, you know, we're bored of that. We hate that, blah, blah, blah. No, we love them. That's why we go see them. And
I agree.
And we keep making them. And I think we have to kind of look at ourselves as an audience, say, if we don't support individual movies and these original tales, we're going to get another Batman. I like Batman. I don't mind seeing Batman, but I don't know how much we need another Batman, but you know, that's why they're doing it, because they're safe and these are massive investments. And if they can hedge their bets by doing a remake or a reboot, that's what they'll do. Because we're trying.
Right. What's interesting to me is that when you look at, just for example, when you take, you know, I was the man who a year and a half ago said on my other show that I thought that the pandemic was the death knell of the movie theater. I had said that Barry was there when I said it. I said that this is it. There's no way that they can hold on to the investments that they have and be out of business for almost 2 years. There's no way. And, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson famously said, and, you know, and he said that the movie that's going to save movie theaters was Spider-Man No Way Home. And that just, and out of nowhere, that is making money hand over fist. People are actually going to the movies despite the pandemic, right? And this is when, I mean, and it came out when we still had these hardcore restrictions, but people were saying that this movie wasn't woke. It was just a fun movie. Never mind the fact that No Way Home is not a great movie, but that I digress. I'll leave my, I know I it's,
you're trying to start a fire, aren't you, Greg?
There are some definite logic issues that I have with Spider-Man No Way Home, but it was definitely fun. I'm not going to lie about that, but people were willing to brave the pandemic and go watch this movie. Matter of fact, you can tell that Sony extended the run and pushed back the digital release of it until the end of next month because it was supposed to be out today or tomorrow, I think. Was it Monday or Tuesday? I think it was the 28th. Yeah, so they pushed it back another month because they're making money hand over fist. But but something like West Side Story, It's just a blip on the radar, and it's gone in 2 weeks, and it'll be on Disney Plus in 2 days. So, and of course, as we know, that was mired in controversy because Spielberg made the choice of not putting subtitles in for the sections that when they were speaking Spanish, and that was something that a lot of people thought was too. And some people consider that too woke for its own good. So, I mean, Spielberg's definitely has had his misses, but not to the effect of people just not go to see this movie. I mean, that movie just did terrible.
Well, I think you were partially right about the pandemic. I think we were trained for 2 years to expect and enjoy first run movies with first run actors at home.
Right.
And I think especially for an older demographic, how do you beat that? You know, right. all the distractions at the theater, the huge prices at the theater, heaven forbid you want popcorn. So I do think that there may be lasting repercussions from this, where
sure.
Spider-Man No Way Home, great on a big screen. It's a communal event. But West Side Story, even though it's cinematic and beautiful, maybe not so much. So I think you may see more and more films kind of go to Netflix or Amazon or maybe just VOD in general. I think that'd be a smarter play. I think about that. I think it was called The Way Back with Ben Affleck from a couple of years ago, which I thought was a very good movie.
That was right at the start of the pandemic, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, maybe at the very beginning. But I think maybe in a way that movie has no business being in a theater right now because that's a perfect movie for the home. You don't need a big screen. It's a beautiful small story, and it doesn't really benefit dramatically from being in a theater based on the culture in 2022. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right, Christian, because what's interesting to me is that I've always said this and no one seems to understand this, and people make fun of me when I say this, but when your expectations are lowered when you're watching a film at home as opposed to one when you're watching it on the big screen.
That's totally
true. So there, and people laugh at me saying, well, a movie's good. If a movie's good, it's good. If a movie isn't, it isn't. I don't think that's true at all because, you know, I ended up watching a ridiculous movie for an hour and a half with Kevin James called Home Team about Sean Payton as the coach, or it was a true story about Sean Payton and him being the coach. And that movie would have been terrible in the theater, but my expectations sitting on my couch, it was actually kind of fun, and it was stupid, but it was fun. And I think that maybe because the pandemic, like you said, we're so trained in that respect that I think maybe that we're going to move towards movie theaters becoming more event cinema as opposed to what it has been for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Barry? I don't want to dominate things.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff about this. I mean, I like to point out, because everybody wants to give Spider-Man, you know, the adage, the credit. But, I mean, March of last year was when Godzilla versus Kong came out and made $43 million, even though it was on HBO. So for me, that was the turning point, honestly, especially for a film that was available on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And yet young people went to see this movie, which really didn't look like it had a chance in heck, but it made $43 million. And not long after that, you had films like A Quiet Place Part II and to a lesser extent, Cruella. But you had a summer season that was actually pretty busy. So I'm definitely seeing that return. Right now, like the Channing Tatum movie Dog, which I haven't seen yet, but people are loving that film and they're going out of their way to see this film, which is basically Channing Tatum and a dog for 2 hours. So I think there's hope. for the experience to return. An experience I had just a couple weeks ago, I saw the new Jackass, which normally I wouldn't be much of a fan of. But you know what? I got to be in a theater full of people who were not only cackling like crazy, but screaming and getting up angrily and heading for the exit door. It was fantastic. It was this complete audience immersion experience that I haven't had in a very long time with movies. So I do think we long for that experience. I do. I don't think it's going to go away. I think what needs to happen is we need to make those smaller movie event films. I do. I think we need to make sure a film like Dog or whatever finds its audience, and we encourage people to have that experience and to, you know, and to have that communal experience that movies can give you in a theater. On the other hand, I did get spoiled like everybody else after a year of watching movies at home. On the one hand, I saw Dune the day it opened up on HBO Max, and I loved seeing that at home. But it did make me think, man, I really wish I'd seen this on the big screen. I know I missed out profoundly watching it at home. On the other hand, I saw Matrix Resurrections the day it came out on HBO, and I'm like, thank God I didn't see this in the theater. What is that twofold thing of you know, you do get spoiled with it. But on the, like, on the one hand, you know, Jackass Forever is not a movie anybody should see on the big screen, but I'm so glad that I did. And the same thing with the new Scream film. These are movies where the audiences are fully engaged. They are audibly engaged. And when they were over, we couldn't stop talking about them in the lobby. So I do, I've been disagreeing with Greg for 2 years about this. Yeah. I think movies are forever. I do. I think in some way they will always find a way to be, because we want to have that experience. Sure. And obviously fear is an element that will keep us away from the theaters. But I do think it is something that inherently, as people, as well as moviegoers, we want to have that community experience.
What's so interesting, and then when it's done right, you were just talking about Scream 2022. What's interesting is that movie has a lot of wokeness, not a lot, but it has wokeness in it, because it takes on toxic fandom in a way that's interesting. But it does. I don't think it really kind of twists the knife and kind of takes a side or what have you. It just tells an interesting story, don't you think?
I haven't seen it, but I also think if you're capturing teen culture now.
Yeah.
And help but kind of dig into some of those themes for sure. But go ahead, Barry, I think that was more for you than me.
No. Sorry, what was your question, Greg, specifically?
No, well, it's interesting because we were talking about how Hollywood and the pictures that we are now seeing, they're taking a different tact. They are, just like Christian had just said, they are – You're catering to a younger audience, right? So when we were growing up, it was a different culture, obviously. So then when these guys are growing up, they're growing up in a culture that is full of virtue signaling. And maybe this is the only thing that they understand. And what I thought was interesting about Scream, it took on toxic fandom. That has become such a big thing ever since Star Wars, right? The sequels that it took it on in a clever way, I thought, without really it did it in a clever way that it was entertaining and not so much preachy in that respect. So that's what I was saying about Scream 2020. And that movie was a lot better than it had any right to be. So
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to alienate your audience. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, every movie is manipulative in some way. Anybody who says, well, movies are manipulative. Every movie, you know, whether we're talking about the soundtrack or the lighting, every film is manipulation. And, you know, if it's done well, you don't realize how you're being manipulated. You know, you're being manipulated when you feel like you're being fed a message, when you feel like the movie is shoving it down your throat, where it's not subtle, where it feels like the whole film has led up to someone getting basically to a pulpit and lecturing at you. When that happens, I feel like, you know, the jig's up and you stop being entertained, because nobody wants to have that experience. I mean, Greg, you remember as well as I do going to see the movie that Steven Seagal directed, On Deadly Ground.
I knew you were going to bring it up. I knew
it. An hour and a half of stuff blowing up and limbs being snapped and Michael Caine being thrown into a vat of oil. We're going, yeah. And then the last 15 minutes of the movie, Steven Seagal gets up in that pulpit and talks about how we've ruined the Alaskan pipeline and how we're ruining the environment in general. And he gives us a slideshow. And everyone I know in that theater, like, this is a good time. There's the exit door. Let's get out of here. What are we doing? Steven Seagal's lecturing us. This is insane.
That was the only acceptable pontificating that I could take, because On Deadly Ground is a great Steven Seagal movie. I absolutely love it. And I can tell you, I'm not a fan of the message, But I'll take Steven Seagal talking about the climate any day of the week. It was so entertaining. I don't know what the heck it was, but I really liked it.
So if it's Steven Seagal or Al Gore, you'll take Steven Seagal.
I'll take Steven Seagal. I'll take his Inconvenient Truth over Al Gore's for sure. So, because he's just so damn entertaining. But, you know, what's funny is that when you, I guess when we walk into a film, we always expect to be entertained. But in some respects, it feels now that it's almost as if that now these movies have to meet some sort of requirement in order for it to be entertaining to everyone now, right? Barry and I were talking about this, that now it seems like you can't have a film like, let's say, for example, you can't have Boys in the Hood and it be directed by a white guy, right? It's important that they have a black director. We're at this point where that is more important than the experience of saying that that guy is good, that director who happens to be a white guy is a good director and he could do it. I think Denzel Washington made a very interesting comparison. He said, you know, he said that it's not about color, it's about culture. He said, you know, Steven Spielberg directed Schindler's List and Martin Scorsese directed Goodfellas. He said, guess what? Steven Spielberg could have directed Goodfellas and Martin Scorsese could have done Schindler's List. But because of their cultural differences, there would be two very different movies. And it wasn't about the color, it was about the culture that they grew up in. So have we become, in Hollywood, more or less, do you think Christian Hollywood's become so obsessed with color as opposed to culture that they're not seeing the forest for the trees in some respect?
I think you touch on an interesting issue. You know, here's the thing. If I'm white and I grew up in the inner city, I had whatever situation I was in, and I grew up in an inner city, and I wanted to direct a Boys in the Hood style movie, and they say, oh, no, you need a black director. And then you could have a black director who maybe grew up in an affluent community,
right?
And has no idea about what the inner city is like, and they say, all right, we're going to go with him or her. That doesn't make sense. I think it's sort of this odd sort of identity box checking that can be disadvantageous. That's part of the issue here. I also think Hollywood has done a terrible job of representing everyone. And I think I think strip away everything, there's a significant guilt there. And they deserve that guilt. They've been lousy. They've been homophobic at times. They've been, you know, racially discriminative at times. Sure. And I like the fact that there are more voices coming in, that there's a Jordan Peele, who is a comedian, who now directs these really cool, interesting, thoughtful horror movies. And maybe he wouldn't have gotten that gig 20 years ago. I don't know.
Sure.
I want the Hollywood where everyone who's got a great story gets to tell it. But when we get to this point where, well, it's a female action hero movie and we need a female director, I think that's poppycock. I really do. You know, I forget the name of the director of Wonder Woman.
Patty Jenkins.
Yeah. I thought she did a great job with Wonder Woman. After I saw that movie, I said, go let her direct every superhero movie. Then I saw Wonder Woman 1984, and I said, stop. I forget what I said. But still, you know, I just don't want this whole, it's got to be this and that. And the bottom line, though, is if I'm doing an inner city drama, it's up to me to research inner city life and to work with my screenwriter to make sure that we get that to be as authentic as possible. And I believe, and I could be wrong, that I can do that no matter what my background is, no matter what background the person who's writing the script is. But you got to do your homework. You got to do your research. You got to be, and also collaborate with the actors on the set, because they may have experiences that you didn't have that will make the story richer. So I'm okay with all of that, but I don't like this whole, you know, and again, female directors have had so few opportunities. I get that. You know, people of color are not behind the scenes like they could or should be. I get that too. But this course correction is an overreaction. And I think it does more harm than good.
Yeah. And that for me is, I guess, what's affecting. I mean, a lot. You notice that a lot of people are starting when the common man is starting to notice those things. and they're bothered by it, you know that you've gone a little overboard. I mean, the latest controversy, of course, being I don't know if you guys are aware of what Amazon is doing to the Lord of the Rings trilogy or the Lord of the Rings, the new series that's coming out. There's a lot of pushback from diehard Tolkien fans saying, hey, listen, this is not what Tolkien intended. And they're pushing, and it seems like they seem to be pushing an agenda that is detrimental to Tolkien's vision. But because we're trying to be representative and diverse, we're losing focus on what the vision of the man who created that universe was. And I mean, is that something that we should be able to take in? I understand that we should be able to criticize it, but is it something that we should, if they're going to spend the money on this to make it, is it something that we should look at and consume to see maybe there is a possibility of good storytelling there? Maybe it does deviate from the true vision of what Tolkien had. And to be fair, most movies stray from the vision of the authors all the time. So are we looking at this incorrectly? I mean, as we consume, Barry, you, Christian, and myself, we consume more movies than the average person because we're critics. So do we just consume this, or do we as critics, do we push back on this, or do we just critique the movie as is?
I mean, I think there's a whole fan culture around this kind of conversation, and I understand their suspicion, and ultimately the finished product has to speak for itself. Either it's good or it's flawed. So that's the ultimate debate, finisher. We'll see in the finished product. I think people are just a little gun shy right now with all the, like, if there's going to be a new project and it's about Tolkien and it's a beloved property, the conversation should be 99% about the storytelling, the property, the history, the relevance, and then just say, oh yeah, and we made it a little more diverse. Like, that should be it. Like, you know, it shouldn't be a big deal that there's a black elf. Who cares? Like, it's not a big deal. Right. You know?
Yeah. You know what the bad thing is? It's not the black elf that's the problem. The dwarf, it's the fact that the dwarf doesn't have a beard, because in Tolkien's universe, men dwarves and women dwarves all have beards. And it's
aware of that.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that do you satisfy this fanboy culture, right? And in some respects, I say that because guess what? It kind of worked for Sonic the Hedgehog. Mm-hmm. There was a huge outcry for the original concept art for that.
Yeah.
They brought it back and they redid it, and it became a huge box office success. And not only that, it was actually a pretty decent movie. But then again, if the fanboys don't push back and people don't, and they notice the wokeness of these quote unquote, or these, the quote unquote wokeness of these movies, we end up getting the Star Wars sequel trilogy, where Rey happens to be the greatest Jedi ever without training, without any kind of struggle to get to where she is. And is it, and as a man who's 46, dare I don't want to, who looks 25, but listen, that's not the point here. What I'm saying is that, is this something that, for as much as I love the Star Wars universe, is this something that should bother me as a fan? Should I mean, because I don't get really upset about it. I'm not a keyboard warrior and typing away, and you know, I was not a fan of Force Awakens. I was not a fan of that trilogy. But is this something for people to push back on, or should they just sit back and enjoy it?
Well, I mean, I think the conversation is good and healthy for the most part. I think it's fun. I think it's engaging. I think that's what fandom is all about. And I think at the end of the day, when the project comes out, if it's good, I think all the negative buzz just goes away. You know, I remember Ghostbusters movie when there was all that outcry about it, and it's, you can't make them female Ghostbusters. You know, a lot of it was silly and stuff. But if that first trailer came out and it was uproarious and everyone thought it was funny, all that goes away. But the trailer kind of sucked and no one laughed at it, and it just made things worse. And then, of course, both sides kind of doubled down. So, and I also think back to Batman's coming out, but I just watched the 1989 Batman movie, with Michael Keaton, who's Mr. Mom. And I remember at the time, it was outrage over it. You can't make Mr. Mom Batman. This is absurd. That's right. How dare you?
I remember that.
And then because there was no social media at the time, it just happened. And then when the movie came out, they go, oh, yeah, he's actually pretty good. You know, so Tim Burton was right. So I think then they just let the finished product speak for itself. And if The Lord of the Rings is woke and it's obsessed with diversity and the story is weak and the focus isn't where it should be on an enriching tale, they're going to hear about it. But if it is enjoyable and fun, I think all the conversations we're hearing now will be like, oh, whatever, I guess I was wrong.
So for you, I want to look at the good and bad of this, Christian, and maybe as it pertains to your book, Virtue Bombs. Where do you think that this is a Hollywood problem, or do you think it's a a movie star problem, as far as that goes? This whole idea of wokeness. Do you think that social media and the advent of social media bringing these people to the fore, as it were, and more accessible? And now apparently everybody has a platform, and if you don't take the proper stance, you're canceled. Do you think that this is why this is happening?
I mean, it's at multiple levels. The corporations tend to embrace this. The studios embrace it. The actors embrace it, whether they want to or not. It's more of a survival mode. And of course, social media amplifies it. And I think the media does bears a large responsibility on this issue. You know, when it comes to free speech, I just thought that journalists would be sort of pro free speech and pro creativity. And, you know, with some exceptions when it's insane or something, but when I read the media, they love to kind of pounce on Joe Rogan. They love to pounce on Dave Chappelle. I'm shocked by that, but it is the state of affairs right now. So I think there's multiple places where you can kind of point the blame. And I think the actors are thinking, I just want a gig. I just want to work. Mm. But if I know, I mean, there was an article in Variety or The Hollywood Reporter, and they said that often actors will be sort of do virtue signaling on social media out of fear. They want to kind of, you know, show they're on the right side, and they want to show their fellow actors and casting directors and screenwriters that they're have the right views. They may not even believe in it, but it's a survival tactic. And, you know, when I opened my book with my whole thesis is that Hollywood is all about fear. It's about fear of losing your job. It's about fear of not getting enough box office receipts, about fear of getting older, about fear of people right behind you who are prettier and more talented. I just heard a snippet from John C. Reilly, a great, great actor, a leading man, a character actor, does comedy, does everything. And he was saying he was out of work briefly, and he was scared he wouldn't work again. Now, here's one of the busiest working actors in Hollywood with tons of talent and clout and everything you want. He's not a traditionally handsome fellow, but it doesn't matter. He's, you know, character actors work forever. And he was scared he wasn't going to work again. Hollywood is all about fear. It's just built into the cake. You can't exist without it. It's just the way the industry works. And then you add this sort of woke level, and now they're even more afraid for different reasons.
Right. And what's interesting, you mentioned that. It's so funny that you mentioned fear, because what I find fascinating about that is that the reason why John C. Reilly felt that way, apparently he was approached by Adam McKay to do this Winning Time HBO Max miniseries about the LA Lakers. And apparently what had happened was that Will Ferrell wanted that part. And I guess that kind of ended up breaking that crew up.
It's so amazing, isn't it?
It's crazy. So out of fear, he was afraid that he wasn't going to be cast. And it actually ruined a friendship between Adam McKay and John C. Reilly.
No, actually,
Adam McKay, John C. Reilly, and then Will Ferrell. It seemed that was interesting. So he broke himself off from those two guys. Mm. That is so interesting to me that you would assume that somebody who's a friend would be incredibly happy that you got a gig. Mm. So I think, you know, I never thought of it that way, but the fear is that is interesting. You know, there's a lot of talk, as we know, about gatekeeping, you know, from Comicsgate to Gamergate and things like that. It seems like Hollywood seems to be the ultimate kind of gatekeeping in that respect, if we think about it in that tone.
Well, I deal with that a lot. I mean, I talk to a lot of actors and directors who are right of center. They're not crazy. They're just right of center. And they'll tell me, can you keep that quiet? I don't like to kind of publicize that.
Sure.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, if George Clooney can hold a fundraiser for Joe Biden, God bless him. He's an actor. He's got money. He's got clout. He's got fame. He can do whatever he wants. It's a free country. But why can't people who are right of center, and there are exceptions, the John Voights of the world for sure. But I do talk to people a lot, and they share these stories. And I'm also hearing now very similar stories about, you know, comedians. I know this guy who's a white male comedian. He's very funny. And he says, yeah, you know, it used to be kind of unspoken that you couldn't get work anymore because you weren't a person of color. He says, now my agents and reps just say it. This, listen, I can't get you work because you're a white guy. Like, that's wrong too. So
wow.
You should not be feared in that environment.
Yeah. You know, so that is so fascinating that when your next paycheck is dependent upon those circumstances, I guess you would be more protective. So that is incredibly understandable. And so, and that brings me to, I guess, the other point. Then that would mean, if that is the case, and if this is what's happening, that means that what the Daily Wire is doing now is probably more important than we even think. The fact that they're making an alternative to, say, what the woke left Hollywood is bringing, and they're starting to make movies and produce movies and to buy the rights to movies. Is that alternate source for material important at this stage, or should they be playing the game with Hollywood at this point?
It's important, but it's so microscopic. I mean, they've got two movies out, and then one's coming soon and one's coming this summer. It's four movies.
Yeah.
Versus an entire universe of movies. But it is important. Listen, Gina Carano was the actress from The Mandalorian who got fired from Disney for saying things on social media that Disney didn't like. And you could dislike what she said. You could hate what she said. But I can point you to other actors who have said much worse, much angrier stuff, much more cruel material. And they never suffered an ounce of punishment. And Bette Midler is just one example. She said horrible things about Senator Rand Paul and, you know, wishing ill on him and rooting on the guy who put him in the hospital and almost ended his life. That's terrible. And Gina Carano never went that far. So sure. The fact that Daily Wire came in and said, hey, we're going to give you a job and you can come work with us. That's good. You know, unless someone says something truly horrific and awful, I don't think you should lose work over that. I mean, I think Bette Midler's kind of ugly at times, but she's super talented and she's a legend. And I if I was making a movie, I'd probably hire her because she's good. So I don't know. I don't like that part of Hollywood right now. I really don't think it's healthy. And there's a clear double standard, which frustrates me too. Like, Alec Baldwin is brilliant. He's got the best pipes around. He does comedy, does drama, but he's done some horrible things in the past and said some horrible things too, but it never hurt him. Well, why? You know,
right.
I want him to keep working, but you know, why does he suffer no punishment? But Gina Carano with a few, you know, questionable social media posts gets in trouble. I think I'm maybe steering things off the topic a little bit, but that's
no, you're not. This is exactly what I'm talking about, because is that becoming, first of all, Barry and I cannot say anything negative about Bette Midler because she's from here, Hawaii. So we it's like in the constitution of Hawaii, so we can't say anything. Right, Barry? Something like that.
He's my neighbor. I gotta.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah. You can't go get eggs or butter if you're out without
a copy of Beaches. Yeah.
So right, mandatory in every home in Hawaii. That's for sure. But this goes into that you're not going off topic at all, Christian, because those attitudes are starting to bleed into entertainment, obviously. And people are noticing. Once again, I say that it's I'm a critic that says, put whatever you want on screen. Put whatever you want. Put it out there. Whatever you want, put it out there. The best barometer for that is whether or not there's a return on what you put on the screen. Right? So if there is no return, there won't be another one.
I mean, I think Dave Chappelle, he pushes a lot of buttons. He makes me uncomfortable sometimes, but he's so good and so sharp and so interesting and so funny. But I think if he was less talented and he was pushing those buttons and doing it in a crude way, and there wasn't insight behind it, there wasn't empathy behind it, I think people say, yeah, I'm done with him. What else you got? You know, I do think maybe it's too broad an answer, but I often think that the public essentially is the sort of the ultimate guide to whether something is on target or not.
Sure. And for that, I mean, we've been talking a lot of negative for sure of what's going on. What are the positives that you have seen lately, whether it be something that's a movie that you've seen is good, or something that a movie in particular, the messaging that you thought was universal as opposed to being very one dimensional? Was there for both Barry and for you, Christian, is there something out there now that you find to be that doesn't push those buttons, but just tells a good story? And it's not getting any credit, or is getting a lot of credit in that respect. What do you guys think?
You know, I really liked American Underdog. It's a faith-based movie that is so gentle on the faith part of the story. It really isn't heavy-handed. It isn't something that, you know, if you're not a Christian, you, oh my gosh, I can't watch this. And I thought it was beautifully told. I think just generally speaking, there's such convenience now to be an entertainment consumer. I'm just kind of giddy with all the choices I have and all the,
sure.
I've been watching a lot of Tubi. Tubi is a free app and it has a lot of content, a lot of really good content, plus some junk, which I kind of like too. But also it's commercial based, but there aren't a lot of commercials. It's not a heavy commercial load. So I love that. And then I always bang the drum about Riders of Justice whenever I'm on a media appearance, cause I love that movie so much.
Mads Mikkelsen. Yes,
it was clever. It was had good action beats. It was comic at times. It was just this amalgam of different genres that worked so well. And I feel like lately I've seen some pretty decent movies. I kind of like No Exit. I feel like Dog, I thought was odd but charming. Like it shouldn't have worked, but Channing Tatum holds it together. So I don't know. I feel like I'm seeing some better stuff of late. And you know, there's so much content out there, even if 80% of it was garbage, there's still that glorious 20%.
Sure. Barry, what about you? Anything that has, done it for you as far as that goes, as far as movies now?
Just seeing filmmakers who are willing to make art and make a vision that is uncompromised, that's something that completely stands out to me. My favorite film of 2021 was Nightmare Alley. Guillermo del Toro somehow got this giant budget to make this movie with his dream cast. It was. I mean, there's nothing about that film that feels prepackaged at all. It is right. Dark and ugly and gritty. Mm-hmm. It. I mean, you know, even though it's based on an old film and an old story, that's the kind of film that you would have seen in the 1970s, and you would have seen actors drawn to a film like that. I also love The Tragedy of Macbeth. I love Mass. These are movies that do not care about their audience. And I know that sounds like, well, Barry, shouldn't they? No, I don't want a filmmaker to care about what we think. Make your art. Don't worry about offending me. I'll be okay.
Sure.
In most cases, these are works of fiction. These are fictional characters. We shouldn't be getting all worked up about the lives of fictional characters. It's something that drives me crazy. Like, who cares if this guy is objectionable? It's not real. It's a story. Let's engage with the story. Let's talk about the story. Let's deal with the fact that people are not perfect, that life is not perfect, that people don't often say the right things. I love filmmakers like Del Toro, like Spike Lee, like Oliver Stone. Like Quentin Tarantino, filmmakers who just do not care if you get it or not. They make their art. And sometimes it takes you a year to get it. Sometimes it takes you 10 years to get it. But I like stuff that feels like, oh man, like this movie doesn't care about me. I love that. There's too many films where beginning to end, it's like this movie wants to hold my hand. It wants me to walk out smiling. I'm just not interested in that, in those kind of films. And it's not that I'm so precious about the 70s or the 80s or the 90s. I just want to see a story that feels like this is, there's blood, sweat, and tears. There's something lived in about this. Too many movies. I mean, it's not just the visual gloss. It's the theme. It's the, everything about it feels glossy. And I want a movie that, you know, it's got some stink and blood stain on it. I know, weird way of putting it, but those movies are still being made. And that's a big one for me.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that I was thinking about it to myself that it is interesting that and this is where I think a lot of people that are Christians or faith-based or whatever don't understand that a lot of the movies now, even though they may be woke, they are kind of sanitized now. I mean, when's the last time you saw a movie, right? An R-rated movie with a heavy amount of nudity in it? Or say, with the exception of a horror movie, I don't think there's been anything that has been incredibly grisly violent in that respect.
No, we I mean? I think John Wick will maybe would beg to
disagree with me.
I have a quick observation, which I used to work with John Nolte at Breitbart News, and he talks about this a lot in ways slightly cruder than I will. But I'm rewatching one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacres, and Jessica Biel is in it. And Jessica Biel looks like a CGI wonder. She's so beautiful and so attractive. I can't take my eyes off the screen. And I remember I just watched the new, there's no the, Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix.
Yes.
And the women in it are so staid and so scholarly. And it's not the end of the world, but it is interesting how sex used to sell the horror movies. And Hollywood has completely gotten off that in many ways. I just thought it was fascinating to kind of compare those two.
And they're only doing it to virtue signal, because it's interesting that you mentioned that, because now it seems like, and dare I say this to get canceled, but there are a lot of actors and actresses who happen to be very frumpy that you would never think they'd be in this situation and doing the things that they're doing in some kind of, even in a fantasy setting, it doesn't make sense. And I kind of agree with that. I'm watching Peacemaker. There's a lady in there who's a very fine actress, but in the situations that she's put in, I don't think that she would be that with who she is and how she is. There's things that don't make sense. And you're right. The sex, what you said, used to sell is not at the forefront anymore.
I thought interesting that Tarantino in his last movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he had two stars who were beautiful, Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie. And he made them look so attractive. Brad Pitt's shirtless on the roof, looking cool as possible. Margot Robbie is just incredibly attractive. And I thought, I've got something for the girls, something for the boys. I have no problem with that. I mean, I think Hollywood should be glamorous and beautiful. And it doesn't have to always have sex appeal. And I felt a little weird when every Fast and Furious movie had that ogling scene where you go up and down the women's legs. Like, even I'm uncomfortable there. But I don't think it should be devoid of it. The glamour and sex, especially in a horror movie, it's show a good-looking dude take his shirt off. I don't care. Something for the ladies. Something for the boys.
I will say, I think you're right, because even though in that respect, I think that I don't mind, you know, it's one thing to be sexy as opposed to beauty. And I don't think that there's a problem with beauty. And we go to the movies for that fantasy. It's not like I think that I'm going to be a guy who swings from building to building with webs that I've made in a suit that's red and blue. I'm going for the fantasy of the whole thing. I mean, is that, it seems like the fantasy element of movies is kind of disappearing in that respect. Like even the fantasy of being beautiful, because the definition of beauty has so changed in the last few years that it seems like everybody's beautiful. You know what I mean? And so I don't think that's the case.
Well, I think what's leading into, I think the issue is sort of morphing in odd ways, because like if you're an actress and you turn 40, you know you're going to be the grandmother in a couple of years. You're going to be playing Aunt May. And I think that's a sad reality of Hollywood. But I don't think that sad reality of Hollywood should make the damsel in distress or the final girl in a horror movie, you know, be wearing like a close-knit sweater. I mean, I think you can maybe solve that problem and maybe, you know, can, you know, retain that in a sense. I think it's an overreaction again. I think women are, you know, not treated well in Hollywood. I think Harvey Weinstein proved that.
Yep.
It's still happening to certain degrees. I'm certain that certain actresses maybe are nudged into areas where they're uncomfortable. So I don't want that. But at the same time, I don't think sex appeal is the worst thing in the world.
So this is an overcorrection is what's happening, because I would assume because of what Weinstein did. This is an overcorrection.
Barry, what are your thoughts on this? I don't think you and I talk about stuff like this.
It's an attempt to avert the male gaze, and I get it. But at the same time, the male gaze is also the female gaze. Movies are voyeurism. Movies are a chance for us to look at attractive people or unattractive people. And it goes both ways. I mean, we see movies where on the one hand, you know, it's somebody attractive pitted with, oh, I don't know about that. But then it's, I mean, I remember seeing a movie where Jack Black was paired with Kate Winslet. I'm going, not in a million years. No, there's no way. And then, by the way, let's not forget every Adam Sandler movie ever made. I mean, Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore, sure, but Salma Hayek, Winona Ryder,
Kate Beckinsale, Kate Beckinsale. Yeah, you're right.
No, never. Yeah, the list goes on and on. It's ridiculous. So no, movies can be fantasy. In terms of talking about the nudity issue, I mean, this is something I talk to my students about a lot because that issue does come up a lot. Like, how come it's always naked women? It's almost never naked men. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy double standard, but I mean, this is a very American quality. And I first noticed this when I went to a preview screening. I'm sure Christian, you were there too. I remember we went to a press screening for Zack Snyder's Watchmen. And there's a scene in Watchmen where Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character shoots a Vietnamese woman just point blank in the head. It's so horrific. The audience did not react. On the other hand, every time Billy Crudup's CGI giant blue penis is dangling, the audience lost their freaking minds. We have such a weird double standard about nudity, especially male nudity in this country. So it's like our movies are the most violent. There was a period where it looked like, okay, Japan, Europe, no. You know, if we could put a flag down on anything in American pop culture, we make the most violent movies. Period. Full stop. But when it comes to sex and nudity, you think, you know, all we did was watch the Disney Channel. I mean, I hate to say it, but like the last mainstream movie to actually deal with sexuality was 50 Shades of Grey. And that's really sad. Really sad.
Can I speak on that for a minute? Because I find that I always like to push back on that. And I guess and maybe you guys will understand this, because this is fascinating that we're going into this. And this is through my eyes, and I think a lot of people feel this way. When you're watching a movie and you're sitting down with your kids, right, or you're sitting down with your teenagers, it's a lot easier to explain away that what that guy did to that guy with that gun was fake, as opposed to something that their kids in the next few years are going to have to really deal with on a daily basis when it comes to sex. And I think what's interesting about that is that, you know, I make this extreme example. Not every youngster is going to go through gun violence, but every single youngster is going to have to deal with the sex issue. Right?
Except for me as a teenager. But
right. I got you 100%. The Don Juan you see before you today was not the same guy in high school. But my
dodged that bullet.
Yeah. Thank God. So you should thank your lucky stars, ladies. But what I'm saying is that for most parents, the reality is the sex, not the violence. You understand where I'm coming from on that?
Like, yeah, I just know what you mean, but it's a funny thing because every pastor and youth pastor I've known in the last 20, 25 years, they've told me their favorite films are Gladiator and Braveheart and Rob Roy. It's like wall to wall violent movies. On the other hand, you know, some of these people knew me in college when I got, I went to a conservative Christian college. Some of you know that. And I wrote this review about my favorite film of 1999, which was Eyes Wide Shut. I got into so much trouble for that. And by the way, you know, I mean, my taste in films has always been very, very broad. You know, that goes back to my childhood. I'm completely anti-censorship. That's probably, that's always been a thing about me. If someone says you can't see it, that's always the thing.
Of course,
even now, I just turned 45. I love Eyes Wide Shut. It is one of my absolute favorite films. And I know it's wall-to-wall material that people don't want to deal with, sexuality and, you know, a bedroom intimacy that's dealing with emotional intimacy, not just sexual intimacy. And most people, if not everybody, does not want to see that film. And that's always been fascinating to me because it's dealing with, real life things that couples go through, as opposed to a movie about a guy who paints half of his face blue and slaughters about 1,000 people in 5 minutes.
First of all, that really happened, Barry. So you should stop that, okay? That really happened. He existed.
The guy who did it, did he have an Australian accent or a Scottish accent?
what's fascinating to me is that I don't feel the same way about Eyes Wide Shut that you do, because I think that was I got to watch it again, but I do not think that is one of Stanley Kubrick's best movies. by any stretch.
You are
in the minority. I hope you got in trouble for that being a bad movie as opposed to you just reviewing it.
No. I had people stop me and say, like, what is this, man? You're reviewing pornography now. I thought you were a person of better character. No, I mean, it was a couple years of getting, I've never been in more trouble about a review than my take on that. And that's how Julia met me. She actually met me at a party and said, oh, you're that Eyes Wide Shut guy.
Ew.
Ew. Yeah. Oh, man. And she still married you, huh?
Yeah, that was the first thing she ever said to me. I'm like, you had me at Eyes Wide Shut.
You're such a rebel at a Christian college, Barry. Such a rebel.
I actually got one of my reviews censored. It was, I wrote a positive review of Brokeback Mountain. And I think that, didn't pass muster where I was working at the time.
Wow.
Can I tell you something? I had, and this is going to shock some people. There was some great character work in that Brokeback Mountain movie, but let me tell you why I hated it. Okay.
Don't say Randy Quaid.
Are you ready? No. And here's the reason why I hated it. And this is the reason why I didn't pay it any merit even now. Is because it totally subverts its own message about the love between these two men when these two men decide to find physical intimacy outside of their relationship. And that blew, no pun intended, that blew my mind. And I felt like you're subverting your message about the love these two have with physical intimacy. With someone else.
But
and I didn't.
You could be in love with someone and have a fling with someone else. That's pretty human. I don't know.
But these guys went to, but these guys went to male prostitutes. And I thought, you're not, it's one thing to find somebody else or whatever. I get that. But I mean, to just go to Mexico and find some dude to physically be intimate with, that for me just didn't click for me. And I was like, well, now I'm out. Now I'm completely out. So whatever you had built in that story with these two guys coming together and how important it was, that physical intimacy with someone outside just totally blew it for me. It doesn't say it, and I will say this: it does the same thing with movies that are heterosexual as well. That doesn't fly with me. It just totally subvert your message when you do that, because especially for faith-based people. That's very intimate, right? And that's something that's even in some respects that's a spiritual thing. So in my head, I'm like, well, this is much more important than anybody makes it out to be. So for me, you're subverting the message of love when you're replacing the love with the physical. And
I think what you just mentioned is sort of a perfect encapsulation of how film viewing is so subjective and so
right. Measured
based on our values. And so,
correct.
And which goes back to the censorship issue, because what you think would be awful and maybe someone dials it up to 10 and says we shouldn't watch that or something, just maybe it's not a great example, but just in general.
Right.
You know, and someone might have thought Eyes Wide Shut was just pornographic. And then other people say, no, it's a story about intimacy and all these different issues. You know, that's what makes it all work. And we need this, the steady flow of all these stories, and the people that don't like it can just tune away and look away.
And I think that's what's interesting about that, because that's exactly what I was going to say, is that we can always say, hey, listen, turn that movie off, or don't watch Dave Chappelle, or don't watch that show because you don't like it. And we can say that, right? But I don't understand why that message this was the same message that the left was preaching 25 years ago has now completely changed. Now that if someone else says, don't watch Dave Chappelle, no, he can't. He's got a platform. We got to cancel this guy. Or I don't agree with this, so this guy has to go away. Where did the notion of just flipping it off and not watching it, how have we gotten so far away from that?
I mean, in the 80s, maybe late 80s, the sort of the moral majority and the Christian right.
Right.
They were the ones who were uncomfortable with art, but they didn't have as much cultural power as people on the left have today.
Correct.
Adam Carolla has talked about this a lot. His theory is that is true, that the sort of the Christian right, they were more sensory or sensorial in their minds. But he said what's happening today is often censorship of thought, not specific words. Like maybe that movement was about taking certain curses away, maybe blocking nudity or sex. But he says what's happening now is more about thoughts that are being sort of censored. And that's,
I agree,
more dangerous sort of element. But yeah, it is fascinating culturally to have lived long enough to see both sides of the pendulum.
For sure. And, you know, I mean, like you said, the right were the guys who started the parent teacher, the parent television council, wasn't it? Or something like that. The PTC.
There's also the MRC or the Chipper Gore group, which had a dash of bipartisanship because she was married to a Democratic senator, and that's another story. That's an interesting story as well.
Well, that hey,
a listen, great movie, by the way. They should make that into a movie.
Hey, we can thank Tipper Gore for the fact that putting warning labels on music albums what fueled that industry and made it even more profitable. So.
Bumped the sales up. Just think of it. John Denver, I think it's Frank Zappa and Dee Snider on Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Who doesn't make that movie?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And as you know, what's interesting, have you watched Dee Snider in those committees?
I think I've seen snippets.
He's sharp. He's sharper. He's as sharp as a tack, this guy. And so I think what is happening is it's almost like this reversal where the right seems to know that these things are just character and that's not exactly what's underneath, you know, and the left thinks that this is all about who they really are. And, you know, I've watched wrestling enough to know that, you know, not everything is on the up and up. Okay. And I still love wrestling to this day. I still love wrestling, but I think that we have to separate art from, I guess I don't want to say politics per se, but being political, so that we can all enjoy something in that respect. We all need to be able to enjoy, and we all enjoy different things. That's why there's, and like you said, it is a feast. Right now, it's if Hollywood were to stop making movies now, immediately, everything stopped, we have a wealth of a backlog that we could hardly get through.
Yeah.
You know, in our lifetime, and it is saturated, and I think that sometimes we get caught up with so much of the talk of okay, well, is this too woke? Is this not too woke? I agree with Barry and definitely you, Christian, that you know you have to critique a movie on its merits, and you have to critique it on what they've given you, not what you expected of it. That's what, you know, that's why I critiqued for example, the sequel trilogy of Star Wars so harshly. Cause I didn't think it was good at all. As a matter of fact, my favorite one of those ones is the one that everybody hates. I think The Last Jedi was the one that took the most chances and was able to do something different.
I have a slightly more respect for The Last Jedi from that perspective, and that perspective alone. By the way, if you ever kind of Google, I think there's a YouTube channel called Film Courage, and sort of a new buddy of mine, Chris Gore, who runs Film Threat, who I love him. He's a great guy. He's so interesting. I could listen to him talk for hours on movies. If you were disappointed by the Star Wars trilogy, go seek out his monologue on that and all the reasons why it failed and all the mistakes they made. It's fascinating. And it's kind of cathartic because to me, Last Jedi broke me as a Star Wars fan.
Right.
I've
right.
Never recovered. So
yeah, I agree. And that's the one that everybody hates. That's the one I respect the most for at least taking the chance. And by the way, your analysis of Chris Gore is great. And I think what he's doing with people bring movies to him now and he doesn't. And, you know, he said it before and I've heard him say it. Doesn't matter if it's politically left or politically right or center or Christian or whatever. If it's good, that's all we care about.
Yeah, and by the way, there are some people on the left who have been very pro freedom. Judy Gold is a comedian who's very left of center, and she wrote a book. I interviewed her a while ago about it. You know, Ricky Gervais is a left of center fellow. John Cleese.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan is no conservative.
No.
You know, so I kind of applaud and really cheer people like that who are, it shouldn't be a political issue, but it's turned out to be in the modern age. But you know, I don't care how John Cleese votes. He's a legend. And I think he's very thoughtful when he talks about comedy and the rules and the lack of rules. And so,
yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that his analysis of the culture has been spot on every time I hear him talk about it. So now, listen, we only got a couple more minutes left. So let's try and end on a positive note. First of all, what are you guys looking forward to coming up this year? I know that the Batman is coming out soon. I know we can't really talk about it. I don't know if the embargo's up or not, but somebody in this room may have seen it. but we will be talking about it on when it comes out on Thursday, March 3rd. To be honest, that was something I wasn't looking forward to, but every time I see a trailer, I'm vaguely fascinated. And the fact that Matt Reeves decided to make a 3-hour Batman movie is kind of compelling. So I'm pretty much interested. So Christian, is there anything, I mean, other than Batman, of course, anything you're looking forward to that, you think, really want to watch?
You know, I used to have like dozens of films, you know, at the tip of my tongue that I'd say in a given year, but there's not a lot rushing to mind. I was on the set of a movie called Terror on the Prairie with Gina Carano, and I enjoyed watching that. So I'm curious to see how that sort of plays out in real life. The Doctor Strange sequel, I think the Marvel Universe has cast these stars so exquisitely, with only maybe one exception. I don't like Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, but Benedict Cumberbatch is just so aces in that role. So I mean, I'm curious about that. I feel like there are some horror movies coming soon that I'm intrigued by, and they happen to be escaping my mind, sadly. I think one might have been directed by Ty West, who I like. But yeah, you know, Lord of the Rings, I don't care about that much, honestly. There's nothing. Take us some slack here, Barry. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Barry, what about you, buddy?
I don't know what I'm looking forward to right now.
My favorite living filmmaker, and he's an acquired taste for everybody, is Terrence Malick. And he has a film coming out allegedly this year. He's a filmmaker who famously films his movies and then wrestles with it in post-production for a couple of years. And he has a film coming out about the life of Christ. It's called The Way of the Wind. And this is the filmmaker of, you know, the Thin Red Line, The Tree of Life, so many of my favorite films, so many cinephiles who I know, they just love movies, they love his films. This is a filmmaker who has nothing left to prove at this point, but he's made a film that apparently reflects his, people long know that he's a man of faith, which is really remarkable for a filmmaker of his caliber. I think when we lost Kubrick, I looked to Malick, okay, like you're the guy we have left, one of these great 70s filmmakers who's still making movies. Like he just does not care what people think. But I think he is a poet and an artist. It doesn't have a starry cast, and I haven't seen a frame of it. And it may not even come out this year, but that's the one. It's called The Way of the Wind. I'm looking forward to that. I look to all the old guys who just, you know, even someone like Ridley Scott or Martin Scorsese. Scorsese has a film coming out this year. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's about it's about the murders of Native Americans by the FBI that took place about 100 years ago, and it's with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro. That's coming up this Christmas.
Something Moonrise or something. Sun Moon.
Killing of the August Moon, something like that.
I should
have it in front of me. But in any case, I look to the guys who just don't care. And they could somehow wrestle these big budgets to make the films that they want to make, and they can make it with Final Cut. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if a film is so expensive, it's hard to get to do whatever the heck you want. And you do want to appease everybody because, you know, it's going to be investment that you don't make the money back. I love that Scorsese, you know, is still able to make a movie like Silence on top of making a film like The Departed. So I think as long as the artists are still making art, and you got young pups, as you've said, like Jordan Peele, his movie coming out, you got these young guys who are making original great work. I think cinema is fine. Cinema is not dead. I think cinema in some ways is just waking up.
Wow. You're so much more, you're like the glasses half full guy, and I'm the glasses half empty guy on this.
Well, you thought cinema was dead 2 years ago, buddy. I had to listen to that.
No, that's cinema. I thought theater was dead. Theater, the theater experience was dead. And I could not be more happy that I was wrong.
I mean, if theater's wounded, I think it's wounded.
Yeah, that's fair. I like the fact that Christian is being very in the middle on this. I appreciate that. But most times tonight, you should definitely take the host side, Christian, next time.
That's right. I just don't want to fight, that's all.
Well, something really quick before we go, because I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to here in a second. Something we didn't talk about that was overtly political and got a lot of attention, but kind of, you know, went away after it was done, this little thing. Don't Look Up. And I was a guy who really enjoyed that movie. Even on a political perspective, I loved how it was all about us as being, we were so too busy, you know, passing each other in the night, too busy talking, not with each other, but past each other, that we didn't understand one another. My only biggest problem with that movie was the fact that I think that the movie was inverse of what actually happens, because the left has the platform, the right does not. In that respect, because, you know, it felt like the right had a consistent platform. But I think that Adam McKay did a good enough job to skewer both sides in that respect. I thought that that was good, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. So even for someone who's a big lefty like Adam McKay. Then again, to be fair, I liked his movie The Big Short, too. I thought that was great. So, yeah. But anyway, did you guys like that movie?
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it started strong and got weak as it went on. But.
Interesting.
But
interesting.
It split a lot of people. So
it did.
I'm always intrigued by that when movies that kind of split people aggressively.
Yeah, right. I'm with you 100%. It seems like it's as divisive as politics is now. It seems it's very interesting to me. Very fascinating. Well, anyway, I'm with you, Christian, getting to what I'm looking forward to. Very much looking forward to the Multiverse of Madness. It's hard to find a movie that you're looking forward to that isn't something that's a superhero movie at this point. It's kind of crazy. That's why I love award season, because I get to see all of these really unique movies that I never would be able to get to see. But you're right. I think that the biggest one that I was looking forward to was Top Gun. And now I don't even know if that's coming out this year. I was looking forward to Top Gun. I was looking forward to Mission Impossible. Those got moved back by Paramount. And now I think they got pushed back to like 23 and 24 now, I think. But yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But Top Gun was supposed to come out this summer. What a great summer movie. I mean, I was already there. I had my Maverick jacket. I had my motorcycle. I was ready to go. So, but I think that that's, I think, I hope, and I pray, I hope that Hollywood realizes after reading your book, Christian, that maybe it's time that instead of movies being or trying to be as divisive as possible, bringing everybody to the table, doesn't matter what it is. And I think that movies, even as maybe as some people would say that they're not, you know, the best of cinema, but something like the Spider-Mans or the Marvel Universe or Top Gun, if it brings people together and they enjoy it together, the more they enjoy it together, I think the more fun it will be for them. And the more people will come back to the theaters and the more communal it'll be, because that experience is priceless.
I'd like to think that my book has saved Hollywood. So
you know what? I'm going to say it right here, right now on this show, that Christian Toto's Virtue Bombs has saved, single-handedly, mind you, saved Hollywood from its own demise.
you want Christian, that on the book jacket, don't you?
Yeah. Hey, listen, next time, instead of having Andrew Klavan write your forward, you should have me write it. And I'll
there you go. All right.
And I'm telling you, Christian. I'm telling you. Christian, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us two jabronis here in Maui. We certainly do appreciate it. Where can we find you? Where can we follow you? Where what's all your socials and things of that nature?
My website is my home base, hollywoodintoto.com, with great reviews from Barry Wurst.
Thank you.
I heard of that guy.
I hear good things about him. On Twitter, I'm at hollywoodintoto, and my podcast is Right on Hollywood. And of course, the book that saved Hollywood is Virtue Bombs, How Hollywood Got Woke and Lost Its Soul.
And you, by the way, you can get that on Amazon. You can also, those are hard copies. I don't know if I'm supposed to ask this on the show live, Barry, but Barry and I would like autographed copies. Of Virtue Bombs.
Request from my people, and we'll get back to you.
Oh, fantastic! My people will call your people, and we'll work it out for sure.
So that's a no, Greg.
Yeah, I know.
It's just a hard no.
I was just making sure I was trying to make it look good for the show. Come on now. But anyway, do your darndest to check out Christian's book, Virtue Bombs. It is incredible. And like I said, I don't think the book is intended to be a bomb throwing in any stretch. I think it's trying to find common ground in a world that we find so much solace in, and how much we love the business of movies and love film. So I think that's always pretty incredible. And I think just for that, guys, check it out. Virtue Bombs by Christian Toto. Christian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, my friend. I have an absolute blast talking to you. So for the Hawaii Film Critics Society, for the man who invented and formed the Hawaii Film Critics Society, Professor Barry Wurst, for Christian Toto, I am Greg G Money. Until next time, you guys take care and go watch some movies. Until then, aloha.